So, as last time already indicated, a lot of people have already seen this Thompson's algorithm for generating regular expressions. For generating non-deterministic finite automata from regular expressions, which yields quite big and clunky automata. What we want to see here is another approach. That's the Glushkov construction, or Barisethi construction, depending on which area, which direction you look at that from. And yeah, the idea is here to use the structure of the regular expression as kind of a guide of how to construct an automaton from that. So the structure of the automaton is pretty directly related to the structure of the regular expression. How's that? Well, the idea is to introduce a markup symbol, which is this small bullet that you find also in this idea description here. And this bullet is meant to flag the part of the automaton which we are looking at, which we are looking currently, and which still has to somehow, or has the potential to match the current part of the input. Let's probably have a look at an example for that. So this is a regular expression. You see it over here. It's already has the right braces, so it's quite easy to see how the priorities are. So, and this is the actual structure of this regular expression, or the syntax tree of that expression, so to say. And let's have a look at how a certain input would be processed with the regular expression, especially with respect to the structure of the regular expression, because that is kind of the guideline for how to generate the automaton. So what we have heard is that we now talk about this little guy here, the marker, which would be found somewhere in this syntax tree, and it would tell us where we still had to look for matches. So in the beginning, we would have the marker in the beginning of the top node, which would say that we, the whole subtree to the right of this marker still has the potential to match some input. That's how this marker would translate. So in the beginning, of course, nothing has matched yet, so we still the whole expression has the potential to somehow match. Looking more into detail, we can also say that, well, if you consider that the top of the automaton is a concatenation, then probably if the whole automaton still has the potential to match, then also its left child still has the potential to match. So we carry over this this marker to the subtree to the left. We will put the marker again to the left of the this particular node because it still has the complete potential to match. We haven't matched anything so far, so it's still found to the left. So this one, let's have a look locally at this subtree. This is the star operator, which is this repeated match. Considering this, this gives us the clue that probably the sub-expression, which is at the bottom of that subtree, also will probably have potential to match. And from there on, we go down there to the next thing and continue to look at that sub-expression or node here. And potentially now we have two possibilities. Either we could go here or could go here, because this is this alternative way operator, this logical OR thing. And we could now either match with A or either match with B. So in this case, the whole thing is still acting non-deterministically. However, in our case, I can say by kind of divine intervention that in this case, in the input, we find a B. So what probably still have the potential to match for that input is this thing and not this branch over here. So we go over here, and now here we have a consuming node. This is a leaf of my syntax tree where we directly find a character or a token, which we can match. So we might actually do so. So there's still the animation to go. So let's match this B. So you see the B here goes missing. We have consumed it in our thing. So now we put the marker to the right of the node here. That should kind of give us the impression that this thing doesn't have the potential to match anymore. We have already matched with this sub tree of my regular expression. And if I've already matched, then I won't descend anymore in this thing. In this case particularly, we can't descend anyway because it's the leaf. But anyway, the only direction we can still go is back up. So we carry this this marker back up. Again, we keep the orientation. It's still to the right, which says that we have actually the whole subtree here has had its purpose. It has already consumed. I mark it as already having consumed once. So also in this case, we still have to continue our exploration. Go over here. So now at that position, looking locally at only this subtree or operator, we see that there's this star operator, which means repetition. And even more, it means arbitrarily often repetition. So in this case, we once again have two possibilities where to mark next. Either we go over here and saying that we consider this whole branch as being already finished, having done its matching, or we might also go over there and repeat this whole subtree once again. So both of these things would be equally possible. And this being a non-deterministic algorithm, that's fine. But in the pursuit of a complete match and a successful run of the whole algorithm, I can say which of these alternatives will actually be the right. So this one, going once again at the site to descend once again, is the one that's gonna have to be taken in order to consume the other B, and we can omit this one. So we will go around this whole sub branch once again, consuming the other B. So let's do that. So we have now gone over there twice, doing all these marks. And then, once again we have the alternatives going over here or going over here. And this time, I can tell you, you will probably like to place the marker over here and continue actually that's not quite correct. Looking at this concatenation thing, I won't place the marker over here. This would have meant that the whole subtree, the whole tree would be done with matching, and that's clearly not the case. Instead, we would go over here. So sorry for the wrong arrow before. So actually, we would have to connect over to the right sub branch of the whole expression. So. And that's the one that's gonna be taken this time. And yeah, for the concatenation, I have only one possibility. I have to go here and have to match with this one, which suits us quite fine. We can process the other A that's still there. So yeah, that's what's going to happen here. And once again, we have to connect over to the next sibling. And here we can now choose which of them we want to consume. And yeah, instead of the right alternative that we have gone in the other branch, we'll now, in this case, have to choose this one. But this one might have been the other alternative. But in our case, in order to consume the input, we would have to go over here and connect over here and then go back up again to finally place our marker in the complete at the global top node. Okay, so that is a kind of a trace through the structure of the complete regular expression in order to match our input. So let's have a look at what we can take away from that. We have done a lot of transitions here, all these pink ones, but there have been only very few which actually consumed input for us. And it was particularly this one, and this one. And, it turns out that if you look at them, it's exactly the ones that are already at the at the leaves of the tree. So, in case that we are at one of these leaves and pass the transition that goes from the marker on the left of the node to the marker on the right of the node, we will always have a consuming transition. All the other transitions we can label with just epsilon. Like this. And if we just connect all of them together, we already have kind of the automaton that we are looking for if we also connect all the other alternatives that we have over here. So we have to make all the transitions possible that might be chosen at each of these nodes. And if we connect them with epsilons, except for the ones that do pass over the leaf, then we already have kind of the automaton that we are looking for. So that's kind of the direct automaton. There's still non-determinism in there, but we're not quite done yet with the complete construction. This one should just give you kind of the rough idea of what we're after in the next few slides. So that's for the viewers and readers at home, I guess. Input is only consumed at the leaves, okay, and the navigation in the trees is without any consummation, so what we do there is just epsilon transitions. So, just labeling the transitions accordingly will already give us the desired automaton. The only way to now that we need now is some way of actually coming up with a formal description of what we actually want to do in that construction. For that, we will have to somehow name these small dots somehow to be able to differentiate between them when we mention them, and in order to be able to express how to set up the transitions between all these different components. So for that, we somehow need a name for these things. And the labels that we currently have in the syntax tree, going back over here, are ones that are used at several spots. For example, the OR operator is in two of the nodes. We have the concatenation operator in two of the nodes. So we can't use these as the names for these states. what would be the idea to resort to instead? Well, instead we would, for example, use for a name for this particular node, we would actually just take the name of the complete sub expression that's dominated by that node. So instead of that, we would take the string A or B in braces with the star and all that. So that's at least clearing up a lot of the misunderstandings in that thing, except for, well, there's of course potentially the same sub-expressions also in the tree. So how do we get rid of these things? Well, the idea would be to not have the concrete character with which to match in there, but just enumerate all the particular matching states or all the particular leaves and place just numbers in there and keep the symbols with which we want to match in some kind of hash table or in just an array or something. So that would be the idea to make these nodes or to generate names for the nodes here. So yeah, that's what we are gonna do in the next page. So instead of just this syntax tree here, we're gonna look at the one with the with the enumerated leaves. So that's the one that we're gonna talk about in our formal construction. And we'd keep the actual matching characters just as and small annotations over here to still be able to actually know what should be matched here. So for the formal construction, what do we need? We need to specify how actual states of our new automaton should look like. And as states, we always connected these dots together, these markers. And well, we can't just take a plain marker as a name of a state. So what we also take into the whole thing is the actual label of or the actual identifier for the state that we attached this marker to. So states can either be marker to the left of a certain expression or marker to the right of a certain expression. And the expression is some node of E, and we take the label of node, which we defined as being the complete sub-expression spawned by this thing. So yeah, there's a lot tailing all that, but in principle, what we always take is this marker to the left of some node or marker to the right of some node. So these are the states. Our specific start state is the state that has the marker to the left of, in this case, E. Well, E is the complete regular expression for which we want to generate the automaton. I think I have never actually mentioned that E is the whole regular expression. So, just to make that clear, so the start state is the marker to the left of that thing. So that's the very top root node of our tree, and the final state is considered the same node, but the marker to the right in that case. So that's. So that's this one here. And now we need to talk about transitions. How do transitions in our automaton look like? So remember that we talked about the transitions which were responsible for actual consummation of some input. These were the transitions that connected the leaf nodes left marker with the leaf nodes right marker. So we define those as transitions. So in case that our currently focused regular expression or note has the form that's the number that we've given that particular leaf, and X, that was the original character that was meant to be consumed at that point. So in case of such a leaf, we will have transitions that look like that. So we will connect the state that is defined by having the marker on the left with the state that's the node with the marker on the right, and we consume X on the way. So these were these few particular transitions that actually consumed something. And now we have to talk about the remaining transitions, leftover transitions. These were the ones that were of navigational purpose, where we just wanted to somehow reach the actual consuming transitions from, well, either the start or, well, some other position in our automaton. And yeah, for this type of transitions, we needed to differentiate between the actual position where we found ourselves during the traversal of the whole tree. And in particular, what was important was the local subtree of our complete tree here. And depending on the operator that could be found in the root of our current subtree, we were connecting the states in a different way. So for setting up our automaton, we also have to differentiate now between the particular sub-expressions that we can find in our syntax tree. So let's have a look, first of all, in the case that we have to somehow find the connections of one of these alternative nodes. So maybe let's try to help you a little bit. So the whole automaton R in this case would look like this. And we have marker positions. There's a marker position here, marker position here, 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 and here. So in case of the OR operator in the root of our current subtree, how do I have to connect our transitions? Well, we should probably always start with the connector on the left of the root. So where does that potentially, or what does that potentially execute? The right sub-expression or the left sub-expression? Both ways? So it's kind of this way. So we go like this and like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Apart from that, we might also reach such a subtree not only coming from the root node and still having to process some input with the help of this subtree. I might also reach the same location coming from the bottom, having already matched at some point. So these are the connectors, for example, for the sub-expression R1, but in this case it's of course the marker on the right of R1. So where should I connect this completion marker of R1 to? say rule completion. Any other remarks? But you're actually quite right. Yeah, you have to connect to the marker that marks the root node as completed. And you see that for R2, same is valid. So that's the way you have to read these the transitions that you see over here. You always have to imagine that particular subtree and all the connectors. And that's the way how the connectors should actually, or the way that these connectors should be set up is given by these templates for transitions that you see in the second column. So let's continue. What else is there? We also have another type of location. For this one, we have R1 and R2, and we have several connectors. So, how do you approach that? Yes? Of the root?
Yeah.
So this one, okay. Is that the only way? You can?
You can connect it to the right one as well.
Like this?
No.
What? No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, in that case, in the concatenation, you definitely have to visit the first one. So the second one will at some point will have to be matched. However, if you remember back to our initial example, this connection didn't occur from this, the start of the root, but instead we went this way. That's also one of the mistakes that I did on the very first try of our path through the thing. So you see, this one is the special one here. And apart from that, there's only one still left, which connects the second subtree to the sub-expression to the root. Okay. And so on. The only thing that's really interesting here is now still this R1, and here we have only very small number of connectors, but a lot of transitions. So the first one is pretty clear. We might match with the sub-expression from R1. However, there's this special feature of repetition. So whenever we come back from here, we might once again go over there and try once again. Yeah, it's different from what over there. So yeah, that would be another way of defining that. But the one that you find over here is the one directly at the bottom. So that's the one that you see over here. But that's kind of, well, it's just doing one step less than the solution that I have given you, but in principle it would be... Oh, okay, so now it's working once again, so that's the one that's defined over here. But we still have another thing, because, well, we might even skip the complete matching of this subtree completely. So that would mean that we would just not match at all with this subtree, and for that we would go another connection, which would be this one. So this also has to be connected. Yes?
So there's alternatives where I can put these arrows and I can put them back.
Yeah.
Make a difference.
Yeah, especially as we will optimize the whole thing even more. So. Yeah. So, but in principle, you would have the same expressivity with that. It's just a way of defining what we actually mean here. So, then there's the question mark thing, but that's just another way of doing the transitions as in the star way. It's just, it has one thing left, so it's this one. Good. So, so far, questions? It's pretty straightforward. You have for each of the subtrees, you have a certain scheme of how to distribute your transitions, and you have the consuming transitions at the leaves. And if you connect all that together, you will end up with an automaton that already does what you want, at least sort of. So, let's look at the whole thing from step back. So. What we have realized now is that finding an automaton for the whole regular expression consummation, that's pretty easy, pretty straightforward. However, it might not be the optimal thing to do here because, well, if you consider what we've done so far is that most of the work went into generating a lot of epsilon transitions, which would only have the purpose of navigating through the complete regular expressions. And we were, when in doubt, we just threw in more of these navigational transitions with just epsilon on there, and we could even have gone a few other ways than the ones that we had before. So there's that's what we did there. However, the most important ones, which would just consume our input, were only a very small portion of the complete set of transitions there. And the question would be: isn't there a way to do that a little bit focused on just these consuming edges, and can we maybe even get rid of a large fraction of these navigational edges, if not all of them? And the next thing is, of course, well, what we've gotten here is a non-deterministic automaton, especially as we have inserted a lot of epsilon edges there, and. Yeah, as we heard before, we will, our intention is to come up with a deterministic automaton. So generating a lot of these epsilon edges is probably moving into not directly the direction that we want to go to, because we have to get rid of them in the next step of our constructions anyway. So if we can come up with an automaton that doesn't have any epsilon edges, we already have... done a large step into the right direction. So, the next big thing for us in the Berry-Sethi approach is now to somehow avoid generating the epsilon transitions at all. So, thinking back, what could we do to remove these epsilon transitions? So, first attempt?
Well, essentially, we define the direct graph, right? With the algorithm just proposed slightly before. So, we could essentially avoid all the epsilon transitions and just go from a start state or the right side of a leaf and make, so to say, transitive closure on these paths.
So, transitive closure, that's. So that's the key word to keep in mind here is this this epsilon transition, the transitive closure. That's the thing that you have already had in this the semantics definition of the finite automaton. If you think back, so the idea would be to not look at just the small step transitions that we have defined in this naive approach here, but instead combine these small step transitions to larger transitions as much as we can in this case. And for example, in such a tree, we would have a situation over here where we had all these connectors. And the proposal was now that this is the edge that we necessarily have, we need to have somehow. This is the one that consumes. However, there's also a lot of other transitions over here on the way back there with epsilon that we don't explicitly need to have in our final automaton. We would have to eliminate them anyway. So the idea would be to connect them step by step to the actual edges that or the transitions that do work, which do consume in that case. So the idea would at least for our approach here would be to connect these. Well, we can connect epsilon edges which follow each other anyway. They're still only consuming epsilon, so we can just do a large one of these. So we can get rid of all the smalls here. With just one epsilon edge in the first step. And we don't necessarily need to stop here, because we can... instead of just having an epsilon transition and then an actual consuming transition, we can also connect these up here and remove the epsilon. And now we have one large transition, and that is the one we want to go for. Then there's also the potential for another consuming edge over here. I don't remember. I think it was also an A. And the next one to go would be one that would traverse this whole fraction over here. So we would throw away all the epsilon transitions. Instead, we would prolong the consuming transitions. Of course, if we can reach the certain transitions several ways, going different paths through our epsilon transitions, we might also have to introduce another edge like this, also consuming A. But that will only introduce a small number of new transitions and still get rid of a lot of others. So that would be the actual idea. We would try to compress this whole automaton by first connecting all the epsilon transitions that are following each other, and then we would connect them to the next following consuming transition, and that would be the new transitions in our automaton. That sounds like a nice goal. Oh no. However, yes. Yeah, because yeah, that's the one thing, the last detail I didn't want to bother you in the beginning with. But yeah, the thing is that, of course, if you think back, we had defined as the end state of our automaton, the one that had as name the whole regular expression marked with the marker on the right as being already completely matched. And if you think back at the whole naive automaton, there were a lot of epsilon transitions ascending back to this root thing, but there was no consuming transition anymore, because those are all the way at the bottom where the leaves live. So instead of going back this whole path, we would instead remove this whole this whole state and mark all the ones that could potentially reach this finite state as the new finite state. So that would be another addition, but we will see how that works out in the next things. If we want to do that in a more algorithmic way, we need some means of deciding how to actually generate these transitions now. And to do that locally from just one leaf or potentially one sub-expression is not directly possible without just without investing a little bit more work. And the idea how to help that would be to carry over other data from other subtrees to that particular tree in order to be able to decide what to do at that point. How could we do that? The idea would be to have certain attributes that tell us useful information about structure of the or context of the subtree where we actually are in terms of attributes of the form. Well, we could compute some set of other states or some specific data like sizes or booleans or whatever in form of attributes and introduce rules how these can be joined and carried over to other parts of the tree. And if we have such a system, we can now try to design attributes that might help us to decide how to join these certain transitions into the ones that we desire. So for that, I will want to help you what we actually might find necessary to decide locally what to do next. So attributes that might help us in locally deciding for just one subtree would be, for example, whether the current or whether a certain sub-expression can actually consume epsilon or not. That is an attribute that I call, for in that context, the empty attribute. That's an attribute that we can compute quite easily. We just have to check for a certain subtree whether it matches epsilon or not. So that's the first one. Then there's another attribute, which I call first. And this is now an attribute which it's not a plain value anymore. It's now a more complex thing. It's a set of states that are, well, certain particular states, in particular read states. These are the states that actually do consummation. And for first, I want to have all the sets of read states below my current node R that may be reached at first when I start descending there. So, in particular, or in principle, it would already be sufficient for me to just know one state that I will reach first. But as you remember, I have this this possibility of two alternatives at the OR operator and also the repetition thing, which gives us several alternatives where to go next. So I won't have just a unique state that I will reach at first when I go descent, but I might have several of them, which may be reached at first. So that's what I want to have as a helper here, the set of states that may be reached first. Then the next attribute that might be, well, the first one, that's the one that comes in handy whenever I start to do my construction, whenever I want to connect the start state with, well, all those states that consume some kind of input. Then I'm interested in the set of all the read states which will be reached first while descending over there. So that's useful for that situation. Then there's the next attribute, which is also called next conveniently. So in this case, I'm also interested in a set of read states. in this case, not below my current tree, but in this case, to the right of my of the current tree, because, well, that's the attribute that is going to help me whenever I have to decide where to connect next, whenever I already are at, whenever I find myself having already constructed a transition that matches some input, and now have to find the next matching transition. So therefore, I will probably need some help, and that's this next set, which will give us the set of read states to the right of my current sub expression that may be reached first in a traversal after I have already matched my regular expression right now. So that's the next set. And finally, there's also the last set, which will do this, which will help me in determining whether I have a final state right now or not. Which is the last set. This is also evaluated to a set of read states below R, and these are the ones that may be reached last when descending into my sub-expression. So that's just to kind of give you an impression of what information we actually need. Let's have a look at how we can compute those informations, and start with a very easy one, which would be the one that tells us whether a certain sub-expression evaluates to the empty string or not. So that would be an example tree, the one that you know already. So let's try to find these attributes for these nodes. Start with the empty attribute. Now I have to say for each of these nodes whether epsilon is element of the language that is matched with these things, with this sub-expression that's dominated by that node. So any idea where I can start? Is there any low-hanging fruits here that we can just pick? Can you say immediately for each of for any of these nodes whether they evaluate to empty or not? Yeah, you're already thinking more complicated than I would have, but yeah. So this one, the star one, might match the empty string. Yes, that's correct. But, well, you also have these ones over here, the little ones that just match exactly one character. So they for sure don't match with empty. So these are all false. So these are the easy ones, the ones at the bottom, the leaves. You can exactly say whether they are associated with the epsilon symbol or not. If they are not, then you can put just false for the empty attribute. If they are indeed associated with the epsilon symbol, then they are of course true. So for those, it's simple. You've already gone a few steps further, but yeah, you can just by looking at exactly that symbol, you can already decide that this might match epsilon. So yeah, and that's also yeah. So that's fine so far. But for the others, well, we now have yeah.
Yeah, it's false everywhere because for the OR we have false on both sides, so we can't match empty string, and for concatenation it's in every case, at least one side is false, so it has to be false too.
Here, in this case? For the top node?
Right side is
false, so false. Right side is false, so false. Exactly. So these are the rules. You have to locally decide for each of the subtrees here. The leaves you can directly say because you can just read it from the additional attribute. And for all of the others, you can simply say by looking at the sub-expression. If you evaluate from the bottom, you will always end up in situations where you have already found values for the sub-expressions for both of them, and you can combine them into the new evaluation of the attribute for your local root, and with those you can reascend and reascend, and in the end come up with a complete thing, and you have rules for exactly these each of these things. So that's the concept over here. Okay, so that's the animation. But in fact, what you do is you do in a more algorithmic way. What you do is you do a depth first traversal of the whole thing, depth first search, in a post order traversal. So you go the left way all the way, and you, while re-ascending through the whole tree, you look at each of these local rules that you have there, and you have these basic cases for the leaves, which we define over here, where we can just say, well, the entry attributes evaluates to whether the symbol is actually epsilon or not. So that's the condition that you have to evaluate here. For all the other things, which are more complicated trees that have subtrees, you decide depending on the operator in the root. And in case you have OR, well, it's just mapping to the logical OR. Empty is, yeah, if either the right or the left attribute. Well, the empty attribute of either the left subtree or the right subtree is OR, is false or not. For the concatenation subtree, you need to have both of the subtrees attribute evaluated and the logical AND for that. For the repetition via the star, you always yield true because it potentially is never matched at all. So it will always, it will not always, but it may at some point evaluate to true. And then there's the question mark for this one. We have the same behavior as the empty for the star. So these are the rules. So these are kind of, yeah, the generic templates how to evaluate this attribute, and yeah, with those you can program depth first search and have callbacks for only these four different situations, and then just compute all these attributes in a depth first search. So the second phase that you have to go through is, well, now we have a more complicated attribute to infer for us, and it's the a set of first reached states. A set of read states that may be reached from our currently considered subtree or root while descending into R via sequences of epsilon transitions. So I've kept the empty attribute still in there, but we now still need to compute these first sets. So ideas for this one. Is there any attributes for certain node types that you can say immediately? Please. Sorry. The leaves on the left subtree. So these leaves. Yeah, but what would you say would be the first set for the very for the leaf to the very left for this one? Could you tell me which value that would be? What would be the set of first reach states for the node here.
The next one is two.
Two? Like this?
No. The next one from the radio is two. No. If I understand the question. The next is from zero is two. No.
But it's not about the next at that point. Next will be a few slides further. But it's just the first set right now. This one's. So if we're over here with a marker, then the next states that are reached. Well, we don't actually have. Yes, please. So that would be the keyword, exactly, itself. So in that case, we just have zero as the first state for this one here. It's actually, yeah, and it's actually can be continued for all the leaf nodes. So leaf nodes, there is just nothing anymore below than itself. So it's just itself. So it's a singleton set each time, and it's actually just the nodes themselves. So these are the ones that you can immediately tell. You don't have to look at the right of something. You can just look at themselves. But the next thing will be in a few slides later on. So keep that in mind for one of the next phases. And yes? Mm-hmm. So you'd say, here you can decide, once again, depending on these things, and you would decide here for adding both sets, which would end up with 0, 1 for these ones. For example, here, let's do the same one for this. 3, 4 would be the one, and yeah, it's correct. And we can continue on, probably. So here, for the star, 0, 1 for the bullet here. 2. Okay. 3, 4 is. No, it's not of interest because, well, we have to look at the left child, so that's nice. So now for the root one.
0, 1. So
that's now where the evaluation of the empty attribute now is actually playing a role. So that's exactly why we have to generate these empty attributes. We can't just combine them widely because, just take the left branch because we have to know whether the whole thing might also evaluate to epsilon or not. So that's where we needed the two things. So correctly, you have to join them both in this case, even though it's a concatenation. So even though we can still formulate the whole thing as in a more formal way, like we did before, so once again, we perform the computation from the bottom, which means that we do a depth-first search in post-order traversal. Going back up, we compute all our attributes. We still start with the low-hanging fruits at the leaves. And for those, we can quite easily decide how the sets of states look like, and they are singleton sets. They only have one state in there, except for the case where there's epsilon in there. In these cases, there's nothing reached there, but yeah, that's special cases anyway. But in principle, you only have one component there. And yeah, for all the others, these are composed sets. They are created from several subsets there. And you have to look at how the concrete sub-expression or subtree looks like if we have the alternation here. What we do is we essentially just join the first sets from both children. If we have concatenation, then life's not so easy anymore. We now have to consider whether the empty attribute for the left subtree evaluates to false or true. So that's this distinguishing here. And we have several cases for that. In case that the left subtree is actually not able to produce epsilon, we evaluate to false. In this case, life's easy. Once again, we can just copy the first set from the left branch. But in case that it might actually also evaluate to epsilon, which would be the true case, then we would also have to consider the first set from the right branch, because, well, if the first might be empty, then I have to take my first element from the right branch, and yeah, that's why we have to join in this case. On the left side? On the R1? Well, the nature of the empty attribute was it's not set to true with the meaning that this branch will definitely be true, but it may be true. So it's always true, but it true means that it maybe consumes epsilon. It might also be completely fine and match something. And in this case, we have to take the first from the left side also. That's why we have to take this first R1. That's one thing might be irritating at first, but these small words may and must and may not, must not, are really important in these contexts. And you will see them also in a few other lectures or, well, topics where we do the computations of these sets and equality systems. In most cases, we always try to somehow come up with a purpose for these sets, and those small words actually matter whether a set contains the set in this case is probably not so important, but whether the property means that it will definitely have something or may have something or may not is that's then the logical contrary to that, and must not as well. It's the, it will say definitely not. So main or may not is probably not. So it's equal.
Why don't we check R2 too?
For
the decision.
For this one?
No, I'm just trying to.
Whether it plays a role, whether R2. We then would have to consider the third alternative, if the left and the right one would be empty, but we don't have any of these because we only have twofold alternatives here, so that's why. It's the only reason. Okay, and for the others we could just copy, so it's not so difficult for them. Good. Okay. Let's continue with the next one. It's the set of next states that may be reached from a certain thing, from a certain node. Yeah, same question again. Any first quick starters here for where we can just make life easy and just tell what the answer will be? Keep in mind we now need the set of states that may be reached as next states. For those? Um, It might in the end turn out to be true, but I wouldn't be so well. There might be components of the sets there, but maybe there's also more. Maybe also
two, I know.
Or something. Yeah, but you see, it's not so easy anymore to pluck that. But you had an idea for last time, where you said that it played a role whether it would be on the leftmost part of the tree. For the last question, that didn't play such a big role, but here. You might consider, in this case, these here. Because, well, you need to think about what might come next. Well, in our cases, next. And if you look at those that I have marked here, next would mean somewhere outside the whole tree. And yeah. Uh-huh, okay.
At the root node.
Okay.
And nothing will come after this, so we have an empty set.
So it's just empty set over here. Mm-hmm. That's already one of the nodes here. And, okay, I can't find any arguments against that. That's a local decision, and it's correct. Any other ideas? Well, the next decisions would probably be, once again, location-based and depending on the evaluation of these things. But in each of these cases, well, these are our states that we can, or nodes that we find at the very right edge of the whole tree. And if we are done with these already and ready to go back up, we now have to answer for each of them what the next thing would actually be. And for this one, we have already seen that there cannot come anything else to the right of these things. So, well, if we need right neighbors for these nodes, we might probably also say that these can't have any right neighbors. The star one? You say it's two and what was the other?
Itself.
I think this will turn out to be correct, but let's continue with a few other steps beforehand. But I think that's right. I will come again to that when we have filled out the other things, okay? Yeah.
If we have a concatenation, then the set that can come next of the right side is the same as the parent node?
So concatenation will be the next one to talk about. Exactly. So because we have now gone over there, top down, we have propagated all the empty set all the way over there. And now concatenation is the one that's interesting now. So, once again?
Yes, if we have the concatenation and the right node has the same set of next states as the parent node?
Yes.
And we already did that. If we have the conjunction of two branches, then they will both have the same next state as the parent node. We already had that. And now I have to look at the concatenation at the left node.
So probably it's good to talk about the last thing you meant the state two here. Okay, so for that one you would combine. You would look at the
first nodes
of this one.
The concatenation, yes.
So you would take.
The case, it may not be empty.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So empty is false. So we can simply take the first set as the next set over here. Why is that? Well, in case that this doesn't evaluate to false, we will definitely have our next definitely find our next reading state down there. And the next reading state down there will be the first reading states that I match with this subtree. So I can just take the first set of that over as my next set in case that the whole thing doesn't potentially evaluate to the empty string. Why is that important? If this would actually be true, in that case, then I would, of course, still be able to reach the states 3 or 4 next. However, I might also match nothing over there, and then I would have to take my next set not only from the siblings of my right neighbor, but also with anything that comes more to the right, which I would have to take from the next set of my parent. That would be the general idea here. So I would have to join them in that case. However, we just have false here, and we can just do with just copying the first set. So that's what we're actually doing over here. So, yeah, it seems that the whole system has already done both of them because, well, this one has also been a concatenation node, so it has just taken, not like this. It has taken the first set from here and has evaluated whether the whole thing might evaluate to the empty set or not. And in this case, it's also, once again, empty is false, so I can just take 2 over as my next set over here. And now it's important, it's a case that you have been talking about. Now we have to consider what's happening at this star. So for this node, we have to come up with a next set. And you would say it is not just simply copied this next set from above there, but it's more than that. So you said it would be 1, 0, and 2, if I remember correctly. And now we can see why it's actually like this. In our case, what we have is we have to combine now the first set of, probably not the parent, but actually the first set of this subtree, because, we are in the context of such a repetition. So the next thing might as well be our subtree once again. And the other thing is, whenever I decide to leave this repetition, I might next reach the thing that is determined by the context in which I live. So that would be determined by the next set from my parent. So both of them are combined into this thing. And yeah, that's how the whole system rolls. And for variation, we can just copy. So that was a lot here. So let's have a look at how we compute that in a more formal way. This case, we have said that we now start from the root and go down from there. And that corresponds in implementation to something different than before. We once again do adapt first search, but in this case we don't do it post-order traversal, but we do it pre-order traversal, meaning we would always get our callback when we descend. So we go top to bottom. And so let's have a look at how our attribute quality systems, attribute equations actually look like. So, the attributes for our variation for the two alternatives is we now determine the values of the attributes of the children depending on how the attributes of the parents evaluate. So the attribute next for the left child is actually just copied from the parent. And same is for the right-hand side child. It's also getting its attribute evaluation directly from the parent's attribute. So for variation, there's no dependence on any other criterion. We can just copy it from over there. Next one, a little bit more interesting, is the concatenation. This was the one where we had to fiddle around a lot. The easy one was the branch to the right, which is marked here as the next attribute of R2. R2 is always the right branch, and it gets its value directly from parent, as before, also for a variation, so that doesn't change. We can always propagate on the right-hand side of our tree. For the attribute of the left-hand side child, we now have to differentiate a little bit. And this this also depends on the evaluation of the empty attribute. But now, instead of evaluating the empty attribute for the left-hand side child, we have to evaluate the right-hand side child's empty attribute. And depending on whether in one case, if it is it never consumes epsilon, then it's completely sufficient to take the first reached states from the right hand side. If it never evaluates to epsilon, then that's sufficient. However, it if it evaluates to 2, then the complete right sibling's subtree might not match at all, and then I have to consider the context for what matches next, and the way where I can or the location where I can find the next matches is the next attribute of my parent, because I propagate my values from top to bottom. So that's in case that I have that I match with true with the right sibling's subtree, then I have to join the first set of the, that sibling with the next attribute inherited from my parent. Okay. So, yeah, then there's the star operator, the repetition, and for that we have said that it's unconditionally always possible to either reach the first reachable states from my actual subtree or the next right context of my parent node. So that's always unconditionally true. You just join them and that's it. Then there's the optional operator here, and for that, well, there's no repetition involved. We just always go on to the next of the parent. Phew. Nice. So, the last step in line is now the last reach state. And yeah, that's a little bit easier once again, because that's just similar to the first reach state, just the other branch now. Last and first, that's just the opposite, and we just have now, we now have the suggestion that we have to go the right branch. So, if it is analogous to the first reached state, well, we will probably once again continue just from the bottom. So for the leaves, we will for sure know what the evaluation of the last attribute looks like. It's just once again the label of the leaves, and then we do them bottom up, and we do combine them one for each other. So for the OR, well, we might reach both of them last, so we don't actually know. For the concatenation, we will go to the right-hand side this time for the last matched thing, except that if there this is empty, then we go also to the left side. So we will have Well, I did it all in one step, but yeah, you see over here, the 3-4 is just the last set from here and not from here, so it's going to the right side over here. And for the OR, we will just take the union of both children, and yeah, I think that's already it. I don't have any special case in there where there's a true evaluating empty attribute for the right-hand sibling, but yeah, anyway, it's just parallel construction than the first attribute in any way. So we have almost everything the same. It's once again that first search in a post-order traversal. For the leaves, we have just the labels as their attribute. And yeah, everything else is pretty much the same. We have the union for the OR operator. And now we have to check for the right-hand side's empty attribute, whether it's true or false. And yeah, in one case, when it's false, it suffices to only look at the last sets of that particular sibling. And if it evaluates true, we also have to take a look at the other sibling's last attribute. So yeah, that's the idea here. And for repetition, and the option here, it's just, well, it propagates from the bottom, so there's nothing too interesting happening here. So now we are already quite seasoned with how we do these computations. So given that these attributes are somehow accessible in the tree, you could perform these depth-first searches. These are just linear runs on the whole automaton and can just leave these attributes in a hash table or something where you can just look them up whenever you need them. And in case you can do that, you can now construct the sophisticated version of our Berisethi automaton. Remember, that is the one that doesn't have any epsilon transitions anymore, and instead features these lengthy transitions that make all these epsilon transitions unnecessary. So, for these, what are the states? I have one start state, that is the same one as we had in the simple version, and we have other states. These are just a subset of the states that we have looked at in the simple version, and it's especially just the states that we had at the leaves. And also, we only have a need for just one of these two states, and that's the one that has the marker on the right-hand side after the transition has matched. So these are the states for the Berisethi automaton. You can already see from that what the actual size of the automaton will be in the end. It will have exactly as many states as we have characters in our regular expression, which is already quite nice. You don't need states in the number of operators that you have, or braces, or whatever. So it's just the number of characters that you use in your regular expression plus one for the initial state. Yeah, the initial state I've already said that is a special state. That's the one that we have taken from the simple automaton. The final states are, well, these are it's the ones that if the whole automaton can never match the empty string or the two backticks, then it suffices to have just those states as last states that that actually have the attribute that we have in the last attribute of the root of the complete expression tree. So the last attribute was the one that we only computed for exactly that purpose, to actually determine what the final states would be. So we can just query our attribute that we computed for the root node and just directly read off what the final states would be. In case that the the whole tree actually could somehow match the empty string, we would also have to take the start expression as the start state as finite state in the whole set, because if we can match nothing, then it's not sufficient to look at the states that can be reached last, but also we might just go with absolute transitions to the whole automaton without reaching anything, and that would make the empty transition through the whole thing possible, so the first state also has to be included in that. Apart from that, now we can just take transitions from the start state over here to all the leaves that we can find in the first attribute of the complete regular expression. So once again, we only have to look at the root node and look at the first expression in there. And each of the states we find in there, we have to connect with the start state and the according label that we have to use here is the one that's associated with the particular state that we found in the first set of E. So yeah, that's all we have to do for the initial transitions. And now everything we have to come up with is now the connections of the leaves to other leaves. And for that, we just take each of these states and that we found over here and connect them to the states that we find in the next set of themselves and so on. So we always connect to states that we find in the next sets of our focused states. So that's that. And the label we get from our target state. So that's all that we need to do here. And yeah, that's an automaton that never has any has had any transitions with epsilon. All of them have concrete labels over there, and it also has a very small set of states all in all. So that's the Berezovsky approach. It doesn't have any epsilon transitions anymore, and yeah, it's quite direct from just the structure of the regular expression, and just applies a few tricks in order to compress the length of the path that we have to go by just merging the epsilon transitions to actual, really consuming transitions. Okay, so now that you've seen that, we can have a look at the automaton that comes out from that for our example. So here you are. Amazing, isn't it? So that's the automaton that's called Berezovsky or Glushkov automaton, or in a few of the literature things also the positional automaton, because the states in there actually correspond to positions in the regular expression. So you'll find all these words in there. There's a lot of words for these kinds of automata. It has a lot of applications in the context of XML, content models, and all that. However, it's still quite large and still non-deterministic, and that's what we're going to tackle next time, turning the whole thing into something that we can work with. So I hope that everything's clear now, and wish you a nice week and nice tutorials. Is there questions? The exercises are completely mandatory. You can. I really recommend to at least do the tutorial sheets if you're not showing up to the tutorial. Without it, will be really hard to, because in the exams you will actually be facing of such exercise. It's not term by term, but in the sense of these things. You can of course, you can have them corrected. You just don't get any points awarded for that. But you can give them to Rafaela. I assume probably by email. But I think she will tell you about that today. But yeah, that's it. I can put them online. You can also get them from the teleteaching archives if you know about that already. I'll give you the link on the, well, that's probably